Oh, yeah.
6:30 a.m. Whichever way I looked at it, Monday was going to be a hell of a day.
Wakey, wakey!
Oh, leave me alone, you evil fitness harpy.
It's a lovely day. Look. Ah, the sun! Let's get some fresh air in here.
Oh, it's like living with Mary Poppins.
There's no escape, so shake a leg and hit the shower.
Who showers before the gym?
It's like living with a 16-year-old boy.
I'll get up if Poppins promises not to bring woodland creatures in to clean my room.
Even woodland creatures have standards.
In the good old, bad old days, I'd have survived all this with artificial stimulants and high cholesterol food. But Francis was determined to make me live longer. And even if I didn't live longer, Boot Camp Bertha was going to make it feel longer.
Cross trainer next!
Is that equipment or an angry PE teacher?
Move, Charles!
Turned out to be both. This medieval torture regime started because I was rehearsing an old bedroom farce and found I couldn't keep up, which, come to think of it, sounds like a line from an old bedroom farce.
Why do you swim with your head out of the water?
Keeps my ciggy dry.
You can't smoke in here.
You can't control my dreams.
As soon as this living hell was over, I had to race into town for an hour's rehearsal before rushing off to a funeral.
Time for a quick steam.
Mark was an old friend from radio days who, according to the coroner, died an accidental death. As accidents went, suffocating in a tiny airless studio was a pretty weird one.
Time for a quick sauna!
What are you doing?
It's how they do it in Finland.
Not in Kentish town. Pull him up.
It was a real-life locked room mystery which was niggling away at my crossword solver's mind.
Time for a cold shower.
You must really hate me.
You'll thank me one day.
Don't count on it.
Okay, breakfast. Juice bar. 10 minutes.
Breakfast at 8 a.m. I know. Crazy. But apparently, some people do. At least I'd earned a proper slap-up cooked brekkie.
One organic porridge, one gluten-free muffin. Enjoy.
Thank you.
I could kill for a full English.
It'd kill you first.
I hate grey food.
Shut up and eat your porridge.
At least the coffee's real.
Actually, it's decaf.
Decaf's the work of the devil.
You won't believe this, but you are looking better.
Than what?
Before.
How bad was I before?
Nosferatu meets Charles Hawtrey.
Ooh, there's one missed casting opportunity. Private Whittler's the Prince of Darkness.
I bet you feel healthier.
How should I know? It's a whole new experience.
But you've got more energy.
Well, we'll find out in Torquay.
Torquay?
You promised. I saved your text. Lunchtime. Show self-restraint to win reward. Remember Torquay. Triple exclamation mark, smiley face, winky face, red lips, kiss, kiss, kiss. You can't renege on a promise.
Hypocrite.
You'll kill a fairy.
Elf in homicide never stopped you.
I'm doing the fitness thing to please you.
You're also doing the whining thing. How long's the run of the show?
It's limited to 12 weeks so National Treasure Bernard can fly straight out to Lithuania for a corset and bonnet drama.
OK, here's the deal. Stay clean to the end of the run and we'll have a good time in Torquay.
How good?
Very good.
Where's that cold shower when you need it?
10 a.m., second stop of the day. I was in the green room when I overheard Bernard and Tony in the corridor outside.
I know it's not your fault, Tony, and I appreciate you're under a lot of pressure.
Like you wouldn't believe.
We were all worrying about the lack of publicity, but Bernard had taken on the role of company spokesperson.
Trust me, Bernard, I talk to them daily. In fact, I talk to them several times a day.
Since our director suffered a fatal heart attack, poor beleaguered company manager Tony had been put in sole charge by tight-fisted producers determined to do everything on the cheap.
Is there nothing we can do? My every waking hour is taken up with getting the show up and running.
I know.
In fact, so are most of my sleeping ones.
And you're doing a great job.
Thanks.
But if we don't get bums on seats...
If you've got any ideas...
I'll put in some calls. See what I can do.
You're a star. Oh, Pippa was looking for you.
Susie was convinced Bernard was leching over Pippa. Then again, Susie was a world-class gossip and also envious as hell about young Pippa's rapid ascent through the business.
I have never needed a coffee more urgently.
Me too, but it's on my banned list.
Suppose you heard all that.
Mm. I don't blame Bernard worrying about ticket sales.
Unfortunately, he thinks I've got more influence than I have.
You handled him very well.
I've known him a long time.
There's always a future for you in the Foreign Office.
And they take anyone these days. Also, I'm in this business for the long game. That's the trouble with stage-struck kids. Once it's in the blood...
What did it for you?
First nativity play.
Snap. Who'd you play?
Balthazar, a wise man. My parents were so proud. Not quite so keen when I went pro.
Unsteady work, uncertain future.
Now, they're very religious. Didn't want me mixing with immoral types. Of course, nothing excited me more. They were much happier when I stopped acting and went into management.
So much more respectable.
I even wear a suit. Mm. God bless them. They've never pestered me about my private life, and they've been incredibly supportive.
They sound great.
I owe them everything. Now, you've got to get off early to Mark's funeral, so I've rescheduled to run your bedroom scene first.
Much appreciated.
Some things take precedent over the show.
Are you in there, Gordon?
In the previous scene, Susie and I had been playing strip hide-and-seek all over the vicarage, and I'd lost.
Ready or not, here I come!
It's a lot harder to play drunk than be drunk, but I was doing my best to act half-cut with the vicar's oversexed and underappreciated wife.
Ta-da! Da-da-da!
Well, what did you expect from a 70s farce?
What do you think?
I lay under a duvet while Susie posed in standard issue sexy lingerie.
I bought it just for you.
Golly!
Is that it?
Crikey.
Do you like it?
I'll like it even more when you take it off.
Oh, Gordon.
Oh, Caroline.
We've waited so long.
Oh. I'm back.
Brian!
You said he was in Canoosie.
He is, or he was, a week's interfaith golfing in the Highlands.
Well, I've got Eric. They're both here.
Get dressed.
I can't.
Why not?
Strip hide and seek, remember?
At least put your pants
They're
on.
They're in the vestry.
Then put your vest on.
It's in the pantry.
Are you upstairs?
What am I going to do?
Squeeze into my ottoman.
I beg your pardon.
In here, now.
Oh, I'll never get in there.
Just shut up and...
There you are, darling.
Tony gave me the all clear, so I quickly changed into my best suit, well, my only suit, and hurried over to Lisa's place.
Gina hates me already. Imagine what she'll say if I turn up late.
Gina was Mark's former wife and mother to his daughter.
Come on!
But he deserted the family for Lisa.
The light's green, moron!
We tailgated every car to the A40, at which point Lisa floored it and we took off over Notting Hill.
Thanks for coming, Charles. I know you're rehearsing, but I really appreciate the moral support.
Tony was very good about it.
Then I'm grateful to him, too. Oh, I'm not looking forward to standing around eating canapés and trying to avoid the Medusa stare.
Where's the funeral being held?
Broadway.
Every actor's dream.
Worcestershire.
Swinging past a gated lodge, Lisa skidded onto a gravel drive and we joined a cortege towards a large manor house, which I took to be a hotel.
Oh, this is a nightmare.
You've got every right to be here.
Gina's the grieving widow and I've been cast as the Scarlet Woman.
You were Mark's partner.
That's not how the family see it. They never actually divorced. Oh, God, there she is. Look, you'd better go and pay your respects. I'll hang back.
Like the whistle.
What are you doing here?
I felt it only right to pay my respects. Also, the house is an arts and crafts Lutyens masterpiece and still in the family, so I'm hoping for a shufti.
Whose family?
Mark's.
What?
Charles, you're on.
What? Hello, Gina. You won't remember me, but I came to your flat in Peckham once or twice.
Charles Paris.
You do remember.
I used to call you the milkman.
Why?
You were always turning up in the early hours with a bottle.
Yeah, very good.
I did crash on your sofa for a couple of nights.
17.
That's very precise.
You don't forget a thing like that.
Maurice Skellen, agent and personal management. We haven't met, but Mark worked with a lot of my top talent. And Charles, I'm so sorry for your loss.
My brain was still recalibrating and reassessing the Mark I thought I knew when a non-denominational celebrant kicked off proceedings.
Great to see you all and welcome to this joyful, musical commemoration of the life of Mark Lear. If you'd like to follow me, India will accompany us on the hurdy-gurdy.
We passed through the kitchen garden, crossed the ha-ha, and climbed to the top of Mark's favourite hill. With the music and the straggling procession, it was all a bit Wicker Man, everyone clumping through mud,
while I picked my way twixt puddle and cowpat.
Did I see Gina giving you a hard time?
There was a moment when I thought I might turn to stone. Is this really Mark's family home?
Where he grew up.
Wow.
Why the surprise?
He was always banging on about the over-entitled and privately educated. Now I discover he's a scion of the landed gentry.
Middle-class guilt. I suppose we're all guilty about something. Mark spent years trying to cover his tracks.
He worked with me. Who's the hurdy-gurdy waif?
India, Mark and Gina's daughter. Talented, but troubled.
She has just lost her father.
And has Gina for a mother. They say she can play any instrument she picks up.
Maybe we'll find out.
I know as much as you. In the end, Gina completely sidelined me from the arrangements.
At the summit, we gathered round a large flat-topped rock, on top of which was some sort of rig with wires extending to a small box.
This ceremony is not about a life lost, but a celebration of a life remembered. A life full of love, passion, and creativity. But he was more.
Not really. Your manner.
What?
The countryside.
I'm all about nature.
Good. Because you've got some on your Chelsea boots.
What?
Shh.
As we prepare to commit Mark back to the universe, we'd like to take a few minutes for personal reflection.
Is that your stomach?
Death plays havoc with my digestion.
Ought to be a good spread.
Lisa brought me and she doesn't want to stay.
I can give you a lift back.
Oh, I might take you up on that.
And now, as Gina sends Mark home, let's raise our voices and join India on the lute as we sing his favorite song, Starman.
There's a starman waiting in the sky to hold us not to worry,
because
he knows it's all right.
Back at the family seat, I loaded a plate and tucked myself away in a quiet little room to focus on the task in hand.
Did you use a ladder?
What?
I've never seen hors d'oeuvres stacked that high. It's not an eat all you can for a fiver joint.
Everything's in miniature. I'm a man, not a borrower.
Why, you're not used to all this fresh air.
Maybe the city boy can learn to love nature.
Nature already loves you. The back of your jacket's covered in organic matter.
Sure you've got enough, Charles?
If you'll excuse me, I think I'll help myself to a chunk of that delicious Stilton.
Did I see you arrive with that woman?
Lisa.
Friend?
Colleague. I've done a bit of work for her and her...
My ex.
Yeah. She just offered me a lift.
Where is she now?
I think she left after the ceremony, which was lovely, by the way, very moving.
Did you smell the whiskey in the air?
Whiskey?
Mark's ashes were dispatched along with a bottle of his favourite malt. Seemed appropriate.
Nice touch, your daughter playing the music.
Her way of saying goodbye. She's not spoken since it happened.
I suppose it's shock.
Typical of Mark. All this time I've tried to protect her.
Did she need protecting?
Emotionally. He was always a selfish bastard. I know you liked him, Charles. I liked him once until the scales fell away and I discovered what he was really like.
What was he really like?
A dreamer.
Well, I've known some charming dreamers.
Oh, he was charming enough. That's how I got sucked in. Probably how she did too.
Lisa?
If I didn't loathe her, I could almost feel sorry for her.
I got the distinct impression that Lisa was the driving force behind the company.
I'll bet. Mark would have had one of his big ideas and sat back and let her do all the donkey work.
Such was her disdain, I started to wonder if she'd arranged for the circumstances of his bizarre death.
He was always delusional. Walter Mitty meets Billy Lyre.
I only really knew him at the BBC and he was always good to work with. I know he got fed up with all the corporate management, but if he'd stayed, he might have been happier.
He didn't have the choice. He was fired.
Fired?
Let go.
He told me he left.
Of course he did. There was a round of redundancies. Mark was very much old BBC, so surplus to requirements.
Do you know if he'd made enemies?
He was always dishing the dirt on his colleagues. But that was Mark. Moan, moan, moan.
Did he ever mention a memoir?
The famous memoir.
So it does exist?
I didn't say I'd seen it. Be honest, Charles. Can you imagine Mark sitting down to write a book, or a shopping list for that matter?
Well, I've learnt so many new things about Mark today, I'm not sure I knew him at all.
Writing requires long hours, hard work and tenacity. Mark never had any staying power. The only things he went out of his way for were chasing women and the next drink.
When did you last speak to him?
the night he died. He was still at the studio, sounded drunk, of course. He phoned to ask what India would like for her birthday before descending into the usual mawkish litany of regret, apology and self-pity. Of course, I'd heard it all before, so I didn't know he was going to do what he did.
The coroner said accidental death.
Maybe. It's a handy catch-all, especially for the insurance company. I just hope Lisa's not in a hurry for a big payout.
I doubt if it's crossed her mind.
Oh, dear Charles. So clever, yet so naive.
If you hear anything about the insurance, will you let me know?
Sure.
This is very quiet.
It's electric.
Frances would love one of these.
Oh, happy to give her a test drive.
How much was it?
Just shy of 65,000. We've all got to do our bit for the environment.
I've got a Sainsbury's bag for life.
Get George Monbiot. You and Gina were very deep in conversation when I left you.
Gina thinks Mark may have killed himself.
The inquest said accidental death.
Yeah, I wonder.
Don't.
That studio was tiny.
Charles.
More a soundproof booth.
How many times?
It was also hot, windowless, the aircon was kaput, and the inside lock of that heavy door was broken.
Are you going to do this all the way back to
London?
There
wasn't even a socket to plug in a phone.
It was a tragic accident.
Or someone locked him in from the outside, someone who felt threatened.
Someone who knew about Mark's kiss-and-tell memoir.
Exactly.
Except no one's managed to confirm this elusive memoir even exists.
That is a slight flaw.
Or a gaping chasm.
But if it does exist...
The only thing this car hasn't got is an ejector seat.
If someone with enough to lose thought it existed, that might be enough motive to kill Mark.
You mean Bernard Walton, OBE, much-loved actor and cuddly national... treasure.
We all know he's angling for a knighthood.
You said he wasn't in the studio the day Mark was mouthing off about his memoir.
Someone could have told him, and he's not as squeaky clean as his fans think. We know he smokes a lot of weed.
For his lumbago, we've been through this, Charles.
And he's long-term married, yet very close and friendly with a much younger actress in the show.
Which could be A, entirely innocent, B, a bit creepy, and C, unless Pippa makes a complaint about him, not a crime.
Okay. Freddy, then.
Much more of this, and I'm going to commit murder. I've given you the gossip on Freddie George. Way back when he was young and needed the money, he made some cheap porn. Tacky, sure, but once again, not a crime.
You're really not helping.
Good. Now, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to luxuriate in 65K's worth of silence till we get back to London.
Fine. Have you got any music?
Morris dropped me at the rehearsal room, just in time for me to run a scene of farcical misunderstanding between me, Freddie, and Susie.
But if Gordon was in the Ottoman...
Which I was.
And Alec was in my own suite...
Which I was.
Where on earth was Brian?
In the library with a piece of lead pipe.
I'm serious, Brian. We're not playing Cluedo now.
I'll tell you where I was, Caroline. I was at the doctor's surgery, where you seem to spend most afternoons...
Are you ill, Caroline?
No.
You're not pregnant.
No.
Then
she's having an affair with the doctor.
But it's a lady doctor. Oh.
You mean...
Well, Caroline?
Who'd like tea?
And freeze. Applause. Dim lights. Curtain down. Thank you, everyone. 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
At the end of a day like that, I usually hit the nearest pub for several unwinders, returning home when fully unwound. Not anymore.
Welcome to Juicer Nanny. I'm Baxter. You been here before?
No.
So this is how it works.
Do I have to know how it works? Can't I just order a juice?
Of course you can, man. What's it to be?
What's in an ass-kicking assicino?
My personal favourite. Juiced asparagus, kale and lime. Really fires up the immune system.
Okay, Baxter, fire me up.
You won't regret it.
I regretted it already. Hi, Lisa.
You got away without Gina turning you to stone, then?
Actually, we had quite a long chat.
Did she tell you what a monster I am?
We mostly talked about Mark. Gina also told me the insurance company are holding out due to the circumstances of Mark's death.
She thinks I'm after his money.
Well, I really couldn't.
Just because she's a greedy, grasping... All I ever wanted was Mark. Call me a silly romantic, but we agreed that his only beneficiary would be India. Gina can think what she likes, but it's all signed and sealed. So as far as I'm concerned, she can go to hell.
Signed and sealed sounded pretty cast iron. Or copper-bottomed. One or the other. Either way, I spent a restless night obsessing about Mark's mythical memoir and wondering if it contained the name check of his murderer.
Morning, Freddie.
Kettle's just boiled.
I've got my own fresh mint.
You put me to shame. How was your funeral? Not yours, obviously, especially if you keep drinking that stuff.
As funerals go, it was fine.
I get to attend rather too many these days.
You knew Mark from the BBC, didn't you?
Now you're asking.
I was, and he wasn't answering. Mark said you'd work together.
If we did, it was donkeys years ago.
Maybe something you and Bernard did? When you were young and needed the money?
What are you after, Charles?
I do crosswords and I get frustrated when I can't work out an answer.
To what?
I heard you and Bernard talking.
Eavesdropping?
We all know Bernard's angling for a knighthood.
You can't blackmail him, Charles. It's already out there.
What is?
The 87 Tory Party broadcast.
Well, yeah, that's pretty shameful. But I think you've got something even more damaging. A little sideline?
Someone's been looking for skeletons in cupboards. Now, come on, Charles. As you said, we've all done things when we were young and needed the money.
I worked as a stagehand on Cats.
Yes. Well, our little enterprise was better paid.
Porn movies.
Movies is a bit grand, although we had fun with the titles. My favourite was One Screw Over the Cuckoo's Nest. No. They were cheap and awful. No script, no plot, shocking production values, but they paid the bills.
Where did Mark fit in?
Well, he was BBC staff, but always up for a bit of moonlighting.
You're not telling me you used BBC premises.
Good God, no. Now, all we needed was a bedsit and some equipment.
Equipment?
For filming.
Oh.
Very innocuous stuff compared to what you can get today at the click of a mouse. Or so I'm told.
But enough to tarnish Bernard's image.
I might not have a gong for services to entertainment, but I've done all right for myself. If Bernard helps me out from time to time, that's down to his generosity. One old friend helping another. I've got nothing to gain from Bernard's fall from grace.
What about Mark's memoir?
Without wishing to speak ill of the dead, Mark couldn't find his fly with two hands and a map, let alone write a memoir.
Bernard's lucky to have such a loyal and discreet friend, especially now.
Now?
His friendship with Pippa. What?
Pippa's his goddaughter, you twerp. How do you think she got this job straight out of drama school?
Still smarting, I went outside for a breath of air. No one had called me twerp since the school assembly in 1965 when I recited the Lord's Prayer impersonating John Lennon.
Hello, Gina.
Oh, please stop slamming things.
Sorry?
Not you. India's broken her silence and the floodgates have opened and it looks like I got it wrong.
What?
Mark phoned India from the studio. I mean, while he was actually, you know, dying.
Why didn't India call the police?
He sounded slurred, so she assumed he was drunk. And from the things he was saying about being trapped, she thought it was just Dad doing his self-pity routine.
The boy who cried wolf.
Thing is, he wasn't alone.
What?
There was someone on the other side of the glass.
Did she say who?
Just one name.
The morning's rehearsal flew by on autopilot as I struggled to remain in the moment and not be distracted by the name Gina mentioned. Lunchtime was going to be thinking time.
I'm going to get a takeaway miso soup. Do you want one?
I've got some stuff to do, but if you're offering, I could go a red hot chili ramen, extra chili. Do you want some cash?
When I get back.
Okay. Holed up in a quiet green room with a phone and decent Wi-Fi, I started to put two and two together, and before long, I found what I was looking for.
See the one show last night?
Damn, missed it again.
Bernard was on and, God bless him, ticket sales have gone through the roof. I thought we were going to have to paper the place with friends and family.
My wife's coming with our daughter and the son-in-law from hell.
Well, don't knock it, every ticket counts.
Yours coming?
Not my parents' thing. Don't want them sitting there squirming with embarrassment.
I suppose one person's entertainment is another person's smut. It's like Bernard cleaning up the script.
Well, he had a point. You don't need expletives to get laughs, especially when you've got a family-friendly image to protect.
True. I suppose that's what you were doing.
How do you mean?
When you went back to see Mark.
Sorry, Charles.
You said you and Bernard go back a long way.
I don't follow.
All the way back to when he was young and needed the money.
Am I being accused of
something? To start with, I thought you were just trying to protect him, but when you said you'd started as an actor, I wondered if it was someone else you were protecting.
What are you on about?
Freddie told me about his little sideline and Mark's involvement. I think you were in those films.
What films?
Come on, Tony. The films Mark was going to list in his memoir. That's when you panicked. Your parents are very religious.
Leave my parents out of this.
You've already said they didn't want you mixing with immoral theatrical types.
I said leave them alone.
Imagine how they'd feel if they discovered you'd been in Flirty Gary, Dogging Day Afternoon, and my personal favourite, Fiddling on the Roof.
You've got Mark's memoir.
No. I doubt it even exists, but who needs a memoir when you've got a phone? If your parents found out about your past...
Stop talking about my parents!
They'd disown you.
They're good people!
It'd kill them.
I'll kill you in a minute!
Like you killed Mark.
Oh, Tony!
One chilli roll made extra hot! What the...
Scalded by miso soup, Tony was carted off to hospital and from there to a police station. With one director dead and his stand-in accused of murder... The producers decided to cut their losses, and One Door Closes did close before it opened. On the plus side, I'd stuck to Frances's health regime, and she came good about Torquay.
Didn't I promise you a good time?
You certainly did.
I'm coming on all from here to eternity.
Do you think Burt Lancaster and Deborah Carr with this cold?
We'll warm up if we move around a bit more.
Oh, moving around sounds good. Oh.
Charles?
Yeah, just keeping warm.
Oh, what?
Oh, something. Ah.
What?
It hurts.
Where?
Oh, you don't want to know. Maybe I'm rubber intolerant.
Let me help you up.
Oh, I don't think that's a good
idea. Come on!
No!
Just feel the swell!
No!
Nearly up!
Francis!
Here we go! No! What happened?
It's what we surfers call a wipeout. Oh, this wetsuit's chafing, something rotten.
Oh, let's get you out of it.
Now you're talking.
Surfing's not really your thing. You've moaned and whined about this health regime, but all credit. You stuck with it.
Well, I couldn't have done it without you.
I think you deserve a treat.
Well, I was hoping...
Something naughty.
Naughty's good.
I mean, wicked.
Yeah.
Something truly sinful.
Are we talking venial or mortal?
How about fried egg?
Oh, make it two.
Bacon.
Oh.
Sausage.
Oh.
Black pudding.
Oh.
Fried bread.
Oh.
Baked beans.
Yes, yes, please, don't stop.
Mushrooms.
Oh.
Hash browns.
In episode 4 of Charles Paris, Charles was played by Bill Nye, Francis by Suzanne Burden, and Morris by John Glover. Susie was Jan Ravens. Lisa, Isabella Inchbald. Freddie, Philip Bretherton. And Bernard, Sean Murray. Tony was Clive Haywood. Gina, Ellie Darville. The celebrant, David Reeks. Baxter, Adam Fitzgerald. And the waitress, Kath Weir. Dead Room Farce was written by Jeremy Front, based on the novel by Simon Brett. The director was Sally Avens. Good, good vibration.